Welcome to the Deconstruction Podcast. This is the podcast where we seek to deconstruct the narratives that define our lives in order to find the common humanity in all of us. We explore the intersection of psychology, spirituality, and society as a way to try to navigate the current geopolitical climate in a healthy and informed way. Here we also hope to explore the mechanisms of change within ourselves in order to experience life a little more fully. I'm your host, Rachel Spiker. As we begin, I want to invite you to take a moment to pause and tune into your environment. I currently am living on the traditional, unceded, and ancestral territory of the Sioux and Tsleil-Waututh Nations, and I want to slow down in order to honor the people who tended to and cared for this land for thousands of years, and invite you to be more aware of where you are as well. And now, I want to invite you to pull that awareness into yourself, noticing how it is that you are feeling at this moment. I can notice I feel a sense of delight in my chest and warm gratitude to be holding your awareness. However you are arriving, I hope that my voice can be with you throughout the course of this episode. Thank you so much for going on this journey with me. In today's episode, we have the pleasure of diving deep into meaningful conversations with the extraordinary Alice Buckley. Alice is my cherished friend, sister, storyteller, activist, retreat runner, and politician serving as a state representative for Bozeman, Montana. Join us today as we discuss the importance of embracing the difficult emotions and developing a relationship with them. We explore the power of gratitude for these emotions and how it can actually lead to healing and transformation. We then delve into the significance of authentic mirroring in relationships and the role it has in playing in interpersonal growth. Our conversation then shifts to the rehumanization of politics and the impact of trauma in the political environments. We discuss finding hope and taking responsibility for creating change. I always enjoy moments shared with Alice, and I hope you enjoy this episode as well. Alice, my friend, my sister, my storyteller, I'm feeling so excited to be sitting here with you in this moment as I get to share the gift of you with my listeners. Thank you for joining today.
Hi, Ray. I'm so happy to be here. I am so happy to see you. I'm so happy to spend this time with you and to spend this time with everyone who's listening as well.
Yeah. Thank you. So as you know, you and I have been meeting almost every morning to just spend a couple minutes dropping into ourselves, connecting with each other, and intentionally starting our day with a little bit of bodyful mindfulness. And so I was wondering how you would feel leading us and my listeners in a little bit of a grounding, connecting exercise before we jump into some intense content.
I would love to, and I'm feeling some nerves myself, so it just feels really good to drop into my body and just let those be here, to get to be in relationship with those nerves and that anxiety. So yes, thank you for the invitation. Yeah. Let's just sit back and I invite you, if it feels good, to just close your eyes. I'm going to do the same. Let my voice just guide you for the next few minutes, just releasing everything else. There's nowhere else to be, nothing else to do. Just get to sit here and be with ourselves, be with our bodies, be with each other. We'll just start tuning in gently, gently to the breath. Just noticing, where is it landing in your body? What does it feel like right now? Maybe taking a couple of breaths together to remind ourselves that we're not so separate. And I invite you, if you're listening along, to take a couple breaths with us as well. So we'll take that breath in through our nose, holding at the top, and letting out. We'll take two more, in through the nose, holding at the top, and letting it go. And one last deep breath together, in through the nose, holding at the top, and letting it out. And now just feeling how our bodies are landing in this moment, and we are not asking our bodies to do anything differently than what they're doing right now. Just feeling the nerves, maybe noticing some impatience, some restlessness, some peace, whatever it is. And that can be through emotions that you're noticing, that can be through sensations that are coming up, through pain or aches, some fluttering, maybe some tingling. Just be with it. Just really being with whatever is exactly as it is right now. And what we're doing now is just attuning to ourselves, knowing that we are our own containers, and that when we really pay attention to what our body is telling us, really turn that attention inward. We can honor, notice, and be in relationship with whatever's coming up. And now expanding that awareness a little bit outside of the container of our body towards each other. Recognizing that you too are breathing in and out with me. You too are experiencing my voice, my energy, just as I'm experiencing yours. That there's this beautiful, profound connectedness within the energy that's meeting both of us. This connectedness with anyone who's listening, we're all tied together. Our bodies, our liberation, our freedoms, our energies. Just as we're feeling that, I'm feeling, really feeling my heartbeat as it's connected, feeling that connectedness. Just noticing, just inviting, just opening. And now as we come back to our surroundings, just wiggling our fingers, wiggling our toes. Maybe holding on to a little bit of that tingling, that energy of knowing we're not alone. We're not separate. Mm-hmm. That we're bound up together. That we matter to each other. Mm-hmm. Coming back to this space.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Feels good.
Yes. Feels so good. I know I use this word a lot when we meditate together, but I think my body can access it so, so easily now, where it feels like ocean of ripples moving across my skin.
Yeah.
And then like reaches out in this way that feels so connected. And so anybody listening, inviting you to tune in how you feel at this moment as well, knowing that wherever and whenever you're listening in this moment, we're holding you in our awareness and our own bodies and experiencing you within us as we're within you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Alice. Yeah. So I think I just want to draw attention to when you started that talking about the nerves that you were feeling and how that just got to be here, and what a beautiful invitation for yourself, but also what beautiful modeling for our listeners who have maybe never thought about more difficult feelings in that context. And knowing the way you and I want to take this conversation, it felt very kismet to start with like, oh, anxiety is here, nerves are here, and that gets to be here. Yeah. And actually I'm going to move towards relationship with that rather than trying to push down or move from. So thank you for the vulnerability and honesty of saying, oh, I'm showing up with some nerves and that gets to be here.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That feels really new for me, I think. Really not only recognizing that, but then really creating space for it. I think it's been really new that I've been able to almost mother or be in compassionate relationship with those nerves, with that anxiety, with shame or grief or fear, whatever's coming up, to say, oh, you can be here and I will take care of you. Thank you for being here. Like that gratitude piece. Thank you so much for being here. Oh my goodness, nerves, it's so good. This podcast matters. Rachel matters. So of course you're here. Thank goodness. So to bring that gratitude and say, and we can be in relationship together and I will hold you as we walk through this together. It's really, really beautiful.
It's truly so profound to witness you in this moment, doing it real time and thinking of the arc of our healing journey together and the relationships we've had of watching you name and label a really difficult emotion and then being able to hold it with that acceptance and then move towards a sense of gratitude for whatever this emotion is teaching you or letting you know, and being able to experience like the authenticity of you, like, oh, I'm so glad fear is here right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't we oftentimes say, oh, it's so silly, nerves are here, or I shouldn't feel nervous. I shouldn't feel afraid. I'm overthinking, or I'm catastrophizing, or I shouldn't feel sad about this. But instead to say, of course, thank you so much. You've kept me safe. You've protected me.
Of course, you've kept me so safe. Yeah. I mean, what profound work that is, and what courage it takes. I think, like, I experience you as so brave moving towards these experiences that I think we've been conditioned to move away from.
Yeah.
And the countercultural narrative of you being like, no, I can hold space for you to be here, and I'm actually going to let you get louder so I can find the messaging underneath. I wonder if you can tell us a little bit more about that journey of how you did that, or whatever comes up for you. It feels so, so big and rich. And I'm wondering if people are listening for the first time encountering, you know, this messaging of like, oh, what if fear gets to be here? What if shame gets to be here? How do you even start that relationship?
Wow. I love that. Like, what's even the first step towards it? Because especially if we grew up in a family where we were left all alone with those feelings, and they feel so scary and so big and so overwhelming. I think that I needed to create some space for myself to do that. And that came with making some saying no to some really big things that gave me the chance to open up a little bit of space and time to start forming a relationship with myself. And I think about how most of my life I was in relationship with other people's expectations for what it meant to be good, for what it meant to be worthy, for what it meant to be productive, for what it meant to survive and thrive in these overlapping systems of oppression that we find ourselves in. And I think those relationships really overshadowed or eclipsed, I think, the relationship with myself. And I don't think I even really realized that I was missing a relationship with myself. Of course. And then because I didn't have the tools or hadn't been in relationships where my hand was held, where my body was held in those overwhelming emotions, I felt really afraid of them. And so I can think of so many ways I've numbed and protected myself from being right up against fear, right up against shame, right up against grief. I think those are the three big ones that felt really scary to me. And I've been thinking so much recently about how our own healing journeys, our own relationships with ourselves just need to come at exactly the right time. And right, we can't rush that. We can't shortcut or short circuit that. And so for as much as I white knuckled a relationship with different emotions or different parts of me, it had to come only recently when I cracked open a lot of these expectations and with them a lot of the roles I was in and the time and space I was taking to be in such strident relationships with a profession or with with worthiness, with productivity, with meeting the expectations that were laid out for me. And I don't think that the relationship needs to start with a huge cracking open, but I do think it needs to start with a little bit of a cracking open, like just giving yourself that little bit of space to say, wait, how am I right now? Like what is coming up? What am I feeling? What is this? And that can be a minute, that can be 5 minutes, that can be, it doesn't have to be much, but I think there needs to be, I think at least for me, it had to have a little bit of a cracking open, of that armor, of that protective shell. And then for me, it's looked like a real practice of putting my hand on my heart. Oftentimes, sometimes it's journaling, sometimes it's just sitting with my own body, sometimes it's just being in relationship with someone else, like you, who's saying, what do you feel like right now? What's coming up for you? What's going on in your body right now? But just those opportunities to puncture that normalization of the human experience and that suppression of emotions. And then the amazing thing is the more we practice, the more we pay attention, the more we start to notice that, the easier it gets to attune to ourselves. And I think at the beginning for me, it was just noticing the emotions that are a little bit easier. Oh, I feel excited. Oh, I feel curious. I feel surprised. Oh, I feel lonely or bored. And then it got to be, oh, I feel anxious. I feel really nervous. And, oh, I feel some overwhelm. And then those, like each one of those being this miraculous doorway to walk through that leads to, oh, I feel scared. Oh, I feel overwhelmed with fear. Oh, I feel grief. And I think we build tolerance, we build space for all of those. The more we practice, the more we notice, the more we attune to ourselves, the more we grow into compassionate, mothering relationship with the parts of ourselves.
Yeah. For those listening, we just put our hands up in pride and excitement. What sacred work that you are doing, that you just outlined in this beautiful arc of starting with recognizing how often you are sacrificing yourself or self-abandoning for relational expectations to ensure belonging, which is actually like hardwired into our physiology as a survival mechanism. And so right off the bat, how you're talking about this, it comes in with so much compassion that there's very real reasons we had to disconnect from ourselves. And then carving out the space with intention to start to call back yourself and tune into like what's actually happening underneath the armor. And even, you know, becoming aware of the ways the armor had been built up that kept you in relationships of belonging, meeting expectations, but keeping you from yourself and waiting, not waiting, but intentionally seeking that cracking. And it sounds like you were in tune with yourself enough that the moment there was a cracking, you were able to like move into that space that then created such a spacious opening that has led to what I'm hearing, but also I have the insight of being able to have witnessed and done life with you, profound transformation.
Yeah. I think that in real time, if I were to think about a process or experientially how it's working in real time, there's a labeling, like an attention and a labeling of, oh my goodness, I'm feeling anxiety and it's in my chest, I'm feeling grief and it's in my stomach, I'm feeling rage, I'm feeling it in my cheeks and my jaw. So labeling and then a gratitude, as we talked about before, deep appreciation that can come after that. Oh my gosh, of course I'm feeling fear. That's so good. My body's done such a good job of keeping me safe. Thank you. Yeah. And then from there, it's not ever asking that fear to go away. You're not ever asking that shame or anxiety or grief to go away, but instead to say, I will hold you and we will hold each other and we can move forward together. Mm-hmm. And that arc, and just noticing, I'll just invite anyone to notice just how that, what that feels like in their bodies as you're moving through that. And it's a pretty profound transformation. And also to have, I mean, to not need to do it alone too. I think you've taught me so well how to do this. I think we've taught each other. And if for so much of my life, my grief, my anger, my pain was too much for the people around me, for you to be able to say to me, your grief isn't too much for me. Your grief doesn't scare me. Your anger doesn't scare me. I can hold it. Your pain, I can hold your pain. Your shame, I can hold your shame. It's profoundly correctional and or corrective. And I think really, really radical if the stories we've been taught are that our emotions are actually going to separate us from each other and disrupt our belonging, disrupt our attachment. It's really profound.
Yes. I want to move into the relational dynamic and mechanisms of healing with you, because I know, like you mentioned, for me, you being able to mirror back how you see me and hold the places that I have shoved away and hidden and kept in the dark or felt was too much for others, for you to delight in them and love them and kiss them on the forehead has truly been some of the most alchemizing and transformational experiences that I've ever had. And so moving from this individual, moving from talking about the individual healing of you turning inward towards these parts of us that felt scary and overwhelming to hold them, into a like meta perspective of having someone hold you as you turn towards these parts. Can you say a little bit more about that process And for people who don't know, Alice and I run compassionate witnessing retreats where this is what we do and cultivate in those spaces together. And so I'm so excited for you to hear her talk about this.
It's it's a complete honor. And I think, Rachel, the way that you've witnessed me and the way not only that you've witnessed me, but you've reflected that back at me has been profoundly transformative, and has undone deep aloneness and shame mm-hmm. and pain that I had never felt like could connect, could be part of relational tissue or connectedness with someone else. And came about, I'm thinking about the moment this came about and us sitting cross-legged, looking at each other and you reflecting back at me what you saw. And particularly, there were many things that you reflected back at me, none of which I believed about myself. But particularly looking at me, looking deeply at me and telling me that I was good and that there were no parts of me that are bad. And I, because you and I have such a beautiful friendship, I completely trust you. I trust you in everything. And so then you reflecting back at me a truth that I don't believe about myself, but I believe you and I believe what you see in me, then has lodged within me and has changed. Truly, your words have changed my perception of myself and my belief in myself and have undone these stories I've carried about myself for years, forever, perhaps. And what it's like when, of course, because our relational is wounding, our wounding is relational, it is so hard when this pain, these wounds, these stories we carry came from relations, came from other people. Yeah. It's so hard to undo those ourselves, perhaps impossible to undo those ourselves. We can say, I matter, but if everyone has told me, or if I've, the meaning I've made from my relationships is that I don't matter, then no matter how many times I say that to myself, I cannot cross that bridge. The bridge analogy is really moving to me. I can't cross that bridge over that river and get to the other side on my own. So for you to say, I will walk with you across this bridge that I see you and you are good. I see you and you matter. I see you and your shame is so easy for me to love and your pain is so easy for me to love is profound. The way that you and I have learned to talk to each other is very simple, and it's to say, can I tell you what I see? Rachel, can I tell you what I see when I look at you? And because we have a relationship of truth and of trust, I think it is the thread then that leads us, the bridge that leads us towards really believing those stories, starting to believe those truths and stories ourselves. And I'm not sure if there's another way, at least when dealing with wounds that were caused in the context of relationships, which I'm not sure if there are wounds that are not caused. And I don't know if there is such a thing as wounding that's not relational, but it's really profound.
It's so profound. I think that'll be the word of the podcast. Mm-hmm. As you were starting talking and relaying back to when we were sitting cross-legged on the beach looking at each other, like I could feel so much emotion rise in me, remembering what that was like in an experiential way. And our like epiphany at the end of it is like, oh, this is so easy. Mm-hmm. It's so easy to tell you how much I love mm-hmm. you. It's so easy to say authentically what I see mm-hmm. in you. It's so accessible and deep.
It's so easy to love you. It's so easy mm-hmm. to love you. And I think about how my shame feels so big to me, and my pain feels so big, and my fear feels so big. But for you, it doesn't feel so heavy. And your shame and your fear and your pain and your grief, it doesn't feel so heavy. It feels really easy to hold. And I'm not, that doesn't mean I can take it from you or that I can even hold it for you, but I can hold you as you hold that. And that's what's really beautiful about the promise of relational healing is holding each other as we're holding what previously we couldn't hold because it was so big and we felt alone in that.
Yes. Yes, exactly. I'm thinking about Thomas Hubel's words that children are actualized in the gaze of their parents. Yeah. And when I think about the way we know how to make sense of ourselves in the world and how that is formed experientially in the environment that we are raised and seen in or not seen in, how that actually creates this internal physiological experience of the world that our entire body and narrative grows around and becomes the perception that we experience life through. And that goes back to what you're talking about, why like I can't tell myself I'm good enough into believing it, because it's like this actual experiential encounter that needs to happen in relationship with another person. And so you are pointing to something so profoundly important when it comes to collective healing, individual healing, and having that corrective experience of someone saying, maybe this is what you were told, but can I tell you a new story? Maybe this is the reflection mirrored back to you, but can I reflect something new to you? And thinking about how transformative that is.
It's completely transformative. It's everything. It's moving, and it's important because we're often, it's so easy to do, and yet we're often not doing that for one another. We're not in the practice of saying, wow, can I tell you what I see? Yeah. Oh my goodness, you are so strong. You're so brave. You're moving forward with such courage. Wow, that sounds so hard, and you're moving through it. Yeah. And, or to say, you matter so much to me. You are so good. Mm-hmm. We're implying that, and implicitly we're doing it. And also to explicitly do it, to think about the stories that we were told, and explicitly creating new stories, explicitly creating new meaning is, it's so important. I don't think I had any idea how important that was. Certainly we're not modeled that type of attunement and relationship with one another.
Yeah. So I'm thinking about if I was listening to this podcast and so wanting to invite listeners to tune into how they're feeling. I know a couple years ago, this would probably have invoked a profound sense of longing in my whole being of just wanting like this kind of friendship and these kind of corrective encounters. And it would like awaken this knowing of, right, this is how we heal, but how do I get that? Where do I find that? And so I'm wondering if you have any ways of encouraging or directing individuals to experiencing this in their life a little more, if it feels right now like maybe unattainable or not accessible for them.
Well, absolutely. And I think it feels really new to me too. It's so vulnerable. And I think just noticing that, like noticing the stories that come up in that, noticing maybe the vulnerability or the, like the clenching up or the seizing up, the protection that comes along with it. And I think we walk towards it by practicing it in relationship, maybe just in small ways to say, can I tell you what I see you doing right now? Can I tell you what I see as you make dinner? Can I tell you what I see as we collaborate on this project? Can I tell you what I see as we spend time outdoors? Whatever it is, just in those small ways to practice reflecting back at one another. I think specificity is so important here too. Instead of saying, I see you, wow, I see you moving forward with so much courage, to say, I see you moving forward with so much courage because what you're doing is really scary. And in the past, you protected yourselves in all these ways and you're not doing it right now. You're just moving forward without that armor, whatever it is. And practicing and stumbling and practicing. And I think about how profoundly hard it was for me just a couple weeks ago, as I was understanding a deep longing I have to matter to other people. I'm so self-sufficient, and this longing to really matter, that I want to matter. And that felt overwhelmingly vulnerable. I mean, so much so that I couldn't even say that out loud. So I wrote it down, and then I whispered it, and then I said it louder. And now I can look at you and say, I want to matter to you, Rachel. I want to matter to you. And just 2 weeks ago, I would have never been able to say that. It's like that needfulness was so overwhelming to me. And then we practice.
Can you see my tears right now? That's so much you matter. You matter so much to me. What bravery to write it, to whisper, to say it, to yell it, to receive it.
Wow. It's like, wow, that was hard to have been holding that for so long and not sharing, not letting myself acknowledge that I wanted to matter to the people around me. Wow. I think, I also think, Ray, that we all want this, and like, and want deep connection, want to be in our authenticity and in deep attachment, want to be attuned to, and yet, oh my goodness, that needfulness is, it's so vulnerable. And and I do think there's an invitation as we move forward to invite other people into it and see if the relationships we're in want to have that reflecting. Because my sense is that we do, we all want that. And it's so easy, you said this, but it's so easy to love the people around us. Oh my goodness. They're so easy to love. It's so easy to reflect the goodness of people around us. And it's so hard to do that for ourselves.
I'm just so delighted in how authentically vulnerable you're showing up here, because you know, I think you're pointing us directly to profoundly real longings in all of us. So there's a need to matter to people we care about. And so I'm imagining your words creating this resonance where others might be able to access and turn towards that in themselves for the first time. And so really
yeah I was Thank you for saying that. I was crying for days and days as I started realizing this. I mean, the tears and the grief were so close. I think the needfulness, the vulnerability, the like having to let go of the self-sufficiency, but also tears for how much I had longed for that and how much I hadn't been with that part of myself that was longing to matter. And then I was wondering, well, aren't we all wanting to matter? Are we all wanting to matter? And then we're protecting ourselves so much from not mattering. And as individuals trying to survive overlapping systems of oppression and late stage capitalism, everything that's telling us that we are these individualized expectations and stories that are telling us that we can't matter and that we shouldn't. And like how well we've been protecting ourselves from that. And then just wanting to hold everyone, telling them that they matter. They really matter.
Hey, listener, you matter a lot. You do. So much. Yeah. You mentioned the way we've had to survive this late stage capitalistic dystopian of horror. I wonder if we can bring, like, go a bit more meta and bring politics or society into this conversation, moving from the individual to the relational to the collective.
Yes. We're going to bring in, we'll bring in Representative Buckley with
Representative Buckley.
All of my compassion circuitry intact. I would love to. I have been wanting so much to talk about trauma in the context of politics and not having the space to talk about that, not even really having the words to talk about it. So this is the first time I've ever tried to give voice to some of what I've experienced in my body and some of what I've observed in the sociopolitical landscape and the body politic at large. But I've been serving in the Montana State Legislature as an elected representative representing Bozeman, my home, for the past 4 years, and decided not to run for another term this fall, which was came as a surprise to me, and also felt like took multitudes more courage to not run, to decide not to run than it ever did to run. And it was a decision that came from my body, and I've been trying to understand it since then, and realizing, and I'll talk both about my own experience and I also think that experience kind of reverberates out into politics, certainly in Montana and also across the country as well. How hard it was for me to maintain compassion circuitry is the best way that I can talk about it, but to maintain the kind of compassion, the kind of humanness, the kind of love and forgiveness that I know myself to have in a system that has systematically dehumanized both the people inside the system, but also politicians, people involved in politics, but also everyone else, and how high the stakes are when we are dismembering our humanness, our need for connection, our need to take care of ourselves and each other. When we are disallowing that, of course the policies that we are coming out with, of course the policies that are getting signed into law, are also disallowing humanness, are also not creating a container for the individual and collective healing that we deserve. And I found this to be true, again, both in my own experience, how in the two-party system in the U.S. we are defined by our otherness, what makes us different from the other party, or what makes us different from other people. And in many ways, celebrating ourselves or telling the stories of ourselves based on how bad the other group or the other person, the other candidate, the other legislator, the other congressperson is. So defining our success, our humanness, based on the dehumanization of someone else, but also not allowing for nuance, for needs, for the breadth and depth of how complex it is to be a human, how complex it is to be a part of a society, be a part of a community. The reduction in our humanness, the reduction in complex problems, I think deprives everyone of the chance for real healing, and for real caretaking. I think about that with voters as well, like the choices that are given. I mean, it's everyone in the system, but the choices that are given to voters, and how angry and how vitriolic the rhetoric is, how it's one side putting on the other. But then when we get into politics, when we get into legislative bodies, how angry that space is as well. And how no one gets the chance to thrive as a full human in those spaces. Mm-hmm. And how, in my experience, the chances I took to try to inhabit my humanness were really threatening for a lot of people who weren't allowing the caretaking that they needed, or the care, the rest, the embodiment, the humanizing experience that they needed and deserved. So I've been sitting with this and contemplating just at this moment, just trying to name what is, and then starting to contemplate how we might think about bringing more humanness into politics. But at this moment, just really naming it as Gabor Maté in The Myth of Normal talks about the traumatized electing the traumatized, the wounded leading the wounded, politics as this place where our individual trauma plays out and our collective trauma plays out on this massive stage, and the stakes and the consequences of that, and how much that's resonated with my own experience and how much grief I have around that as well.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember in October when you were talking a little bit about this with me and really painting this visceral image of what it was like to be in that environment of policy change and politics, and feeling in my body this like tensing up contraction, and recognizing how like you have to dissociate to survive those environments, and then being like, whoa, how do we lead from a dissociated place? And so I think what you're talking about is pointing and bringing a microscope to something that is so important, and also you bringing in the conversation about how do we rehumanize politics? How do I stay connected to my humanness? My compassion circuitry in politics is so important. Like that is revolution. That's revelatory.
Yeah, it's exactly right. I mean, I think about just the way that it's set up either on campaign cycles or in the legislature, in general, the lack of rest, the expectations of winning, of continuing, of doing so much, like these myths around how much we as an individual can do, the transactional nature of it, the viewing voters as numbers, viewing votes as numbers, viewing these really complicated issues in such a reductionist way, because that's how things have been done. That's the stories we tell, the stories about how campaigns have to go, the stories about how a legislative session has to go, and that hustle, that work, that leaving everything out on the field, on the mat. And then that translating into a legislative session where our bodies, our physical bodies, are in these spaces, in these cramped chairs, sitting down for 10, 12, 14 hours a day, moving through bill after bill, without space to rest, without space to stretch, without space to breathe, without space to exist as a body in all of our needfulness and our physical need to stretch, to move, to care for ourselves. And so there's that physical aspect of it. And then there's the legislative aspect, emotional aspect of being asked to make binary decisions. I mean, the very nature of a yes or a no vote, being asked to make binary decisions on incredibly complex, nuanced issues. Again, this systematic dehumanization that's taking place, this othering, the transactional nature of trading votes, trying to move a piece of legislation forward, all of the disassociation and all the protective measures that need to take place so that individuals can move through that system, and the dismemberment that happens, whether it's dismemberment with voters, with the people who these policies are going to affect, with legislators or staff or anyone else involved in the context of politics, what the stakes, and then the impact on the harm that's done on our physical bodies, on our emotional and spiritual bodies as individuals existing in that space, and then the harm that's done as a result of the policies that are passed. And again, not an accident at all that there is this dehumanization, and then the policies themselves oftentimes restrict the autonomy, the liberty, the freedom of individuals existing in those particular communities, not viewing people as the biggest, most liberated, beautiful versions of themselves. The need to constrict, the need to control, the need to restrict. It feels like politics is, and the sociopolitical landscape is, a place where our individual trauma, the stories that we carry, is magnified and plays out to the detriment of of all of us.
When I hear you lay it out that way, I'm like, oh God, what do we do? I can sense, like, again, that I can feel that contraction all over again of, like, one, it makes so much sense. Like, it really, truly makes sense how trauma begets trauma. And if we shape to the environments we're formed in, we're going to also create policies that mirror the environments we are formed in. And that's going to keep replicating in a grander scale until we see the state North America is in right now, which is toxic, for lack of a better word. So I'm finding myself so struck knowing how long and well you lived, breathed, and worked in that field. And I'm thinking back to, like, the beginning of this conversation where you're talking about this moment of having to recalibrate and look at all your relationships and see where we were self-abandoning and bring yourself back and feeling this renewed sense of awe at the courage that that takes. The sacrifice that that takes. Being in the role that you were.
I think another interesting thing about that is that the more successful I was as a legislator, and I was a very successful legislator, the more I was dismembering parts of myself and self-abandoning. And I think I think we do really see that in our political leaders are the ones who are exhibiting the most dismemberment and who are the masks and the armor are the heaviest. Of course, because they're protecting themselves in the midst of an incredibly toxic, dehumanizing system. Of course. But just what the stakes are when politicians and political leaders, especially those who are quote unquote the most successful, like what it looks like when they are forsaking their own humanness, when they are filling the holes and these longings and covering up their pain and fear with whatever it is they're doing, pointing fingers or sticks at other people, protecting themselves in other ways, distracting. And I think that's something I've been thinking about a lot of. Are there ways in which you can create containers for thriving, where there doesn't need to be that dismemberment or that, that self-abandoning, and how hard that is, right? If just as you said, the conditions of our pain and our trauma are then being replicated and amplified, and then the policies that are coming out of these governing bodies are then contributing to containers, nuclear family containers, individual containers, community containers that are replicating and amplifying trauma. It's a cycle that is a bit overwhelming to step back and take a look at, especially as we know more about as we're understanding more about trauma and the system and the conditions, whether it is racism or poverty or late stage capitalism, that are marginalizing and inflicting harm on individuals who are trying to survive them.
So what do we do, Alice?
Well, what's coming to me right now is like, we have to love our way out of it. Of course. I think for me, it's taking a step back to come back to my heart, my compassion, my forgiveness, to come back to myself in order to say, how do I move? I think what I realized this fall is I cannot do the work I want to be doing in the world if I am not doing that work on myself. I cannot be in integrity in this work if I'm not in compassionate integrity with myself. I think we hold each other, understanding that the way we hold each other is revolutionary. Like it starts with the way we hold ourselves. It starts with the way we hold each other. It starts with daring to imagine that these systems can be different than the systems that are in place right now, right? That those systems were also the imagination of a bunch of folks. It was just a bunch of old white guys. But that we can imagine a different body politic. We can imagine a different way of existing. But that starts from rest, from being with ourselves, from being in relationship with our bodies the way that we want to be in relationship with other people, by continuing to reject and put our hand up to stories and systems that are not humanizing everyone, every single person, understanding that our liberation is bound up in one another. I think that works. I mean, it's such intimate work that I think just needs to start at home, start with us, and then grow out from there. And for me, it's also looked like being in radically honest relationships with people who are still involved in politics and saying, this is so hard. How can I hold you? How are you doing? Your sadness can be here. Your nerves can be here. Your anger can be here. Wow, that sounds so hard. Like humanizing that experience and showing up to others in a way that I always wanted to show up for myself, but felt felt like I oftentimes wasn't asking or wasn't able to access that. But every time we can inject humanness in a system that is built on the premise of dehumanizing some bodies, I think it's part of the revolution. I think it's part of how we change.
Mm-hmm. Anytime we can inject humanness into a system that is built on dehumanization of bodies, that's the revolution.
Yeah.
How hopeful. Thank you for bringing all that back to ourself and our bodies.
Yeah.
And our closest relationships.
Yeah.
And like thinking about holding my integrity, my work, what I want to bring to the world here to here, and letting that ripple out, like that feels doable.
Yeah.
You know, I think it can get really easy to feel overwhelmed and hopeless in the political climate that feels like there's no answers or no way out. And when we remember, like, we actually have a radical responsibility to our own tending to and healing, and that's actually the most important thing we can do to create a structural change.
Yeah.
It feels very good to be reminded of.
Yeah. Yeah. And just as we're noticing, and building awareness of the sensations and emotions that are showing up in our own bodies, bringing awareness to the stories in politics as well of this person is bad or this person is good or this person has done the right thing or the wrong thing, and to say, what is that? And can we ask more questions? Can we bring some nuance? I found it to be one of the things that was hardest for me in the context of politics was to hold on to my belief that everyone is so good and that there is nothing that could possibly make you bad. And I felt so lonely in that belief in politics. It was a very lonely place to be holding that. And I felt quite at times lonely, at other times really ostracized for that. But I think outside of politics, or outside of existing quite inside of it, just existing as a witness and a voter, it's a little bit easier to access that of no one's bad. Mm-hmm. Everyone's doing the best that they're able to do.
Yes.
What they know and dealing with their pain and their fear in the way that they know how. And that doesn't abdicate any responsibility. It just, it just injects humanness, and it gives us the permission to view each other and ourselves as humans. And to understand, I mean, it's always such an invitation to be like, to ask ourselves, what is it about this other person that is making me so mad or is bringing so much judgment? And what am I maybe feeling anger or judgment towards myself that is being reflected? Now I'm reflecting onto this other person. And so it's just such an invitation, I think, always. Like, politics in general is this exceptional crucible to engage in awareness, nuance, humanizing, compassion work, because it's so devoid of all of that.
Yeah, that's a beautiful invitation. Thank you for re-reminding us of the way that triggers actually are guideposts towards areas in ourselves that need to be healed.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a really beautiful, hopeful invitation and remembering to land on in this conversation today. Thank you so much for the wisdom and the knowledge and personal integrity that you've brought to this conversation. I'm curious, how do people find you if they want to know more and follow more of what you're bringing to this earth?
Where can you find me? On social media, as Alice Buckley, Alice Ann Buckley. Rachel and I are are holding compassionate witnessing retreats, which is a really beautiful time to practice being in compassionate relationship with ourselves and each other, reflecting that goodness. So hard to do for ourselves, so easy to do for each other. And we'll start, those are in person, and we'll start doing, holding some online as well to make that more accessible. And I feel we're all engaged in politics in one way or another. Our act of being human, surviving these overlapping systems of oppression, is inherently political. The way we view our own bodies and other bodies is political. And I just want to make such an invitation to reach out to me to be in conversation about that, because I'm thinking about that all the time. And whether you're thinking about running for office or thinking about registering to vote or thinking about what it's like to engage in as a citizen connected to your community, I am thinking about that all the time, and I want to be in dialogue with you.
Thank you for that, Alice. I love you. You matter to me, but the work you're doing in the world matters so much. So thank you. Thank you for prioritizing your well-being so you can continue to show up in the impactful, transformative way that you are.
Thank you, Ray.
Thank you for being on the podcast today.
I love you, and such a privilege to be in this space and to be in community with everyone listening. And I just feel connected and feel grateful.
Thank you. As we come to the end of this episode, I want to take a moment to express my deepest gratitude to you, our wonderful listeners. It feels like a profound privilege to take up space in your awareness. Your support means the world to us, and it's because of your curiosity and openness that this podcast is possible. A big thank you to our guests for sharing their wisdom and insights with us all today. If their words resonated with you, I encourage you to look them up on social media or find their website. I also want to extend my gratitude to Jonathan Kiddo for his unwavering support and dedication to producing this podcast. And to all of you tuning in, if you've enjoyed what you've heard, please consider leaving a rating or review. It truly helps in this podcast world. Remember, the journey of deconstruction doesn't end here. Stay curious, stay connected, and join us next time for another episode of Deconstruction.